Going into the week and getting 1 point from two games might not have seemed such a bad thing, but the manner of Reading's 3-0 defeat at Preston has left some fans sweating. Add that to Fulham's rampant form, and we've got an interesting little playoff race in our hands. We'll try and figure out if Reading can do the business and make that top six come May, or if they're setting themselves up for another fall at the hand of the West Londoners. All in the Tireless Den podcast, episode number 122. Hello, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetirelessden.com. And thank you, as always, to everyone out there for joining us, hitting that download button. Before we go any further, as always, I have to thank everyone who has helped us through the Patreon crowdfunding campaign. Your continued support is very, very much appreciated, and it's always touching the amount of people that decide to put their hand in the pocket and give that extra couple of quid to help drive the show forward. You can head over to patreon.com/thetirelessend. That's patreon.com/thetirelessend for all the info. And a big thank you to Ben Greenwood as well, who has helped us out. You might have noticed we've got a new shiny logo for the show in the past couple of weeks. That is his handiwork. He's also the man behind the Yapstan Batman videos. So a very talented individual. So I very much encourage you to go and check out his work. We've got a link to his Twitter account on the article that accompanies this very episode. Anyway, with that in mind, I need to introduce my two co-hosts this week. One, a familiar face, or familiar voice anyway, yeah, Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Hello.
There's a good link between Batman and Alan West, because everyone know the old Batman was called Alan West.
It was.
I don't know if you meant to do that, but it was excellent work.
Can I just check you've turned your phone off this week?
I think it's definitely off this week.
Okay.
I thought that last week. So.
Yeah, very much so. And delighted to welcome back to the show for the first time this season, Rob Langham from The Two Unfortunates. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks very much. And I would say that my partner's dad does sometimes think my name is Robin, just to continue the
excellent
theme. Here.
Excellent. Yeah. We've got Batman and Robin on the show. I will take that. But as I said, lots to get to. A really up and down week as far as Reading are concerned. We've also got a few bits and news bites, a couple of injuries to talk about, and lots more in the mailbag. Westy, as you always know, and you've always preached, as soon as Reading get beat,
it's a busy week in the mailbag.
It is indeed. We've got a bulging mail sack, and we'll come on to that a bit later on. In the meantime, let's get into that recap.
View from the Tarhurst End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
Again, gents, as I mentioned at the very top of the show, if you'd said to you at the start of the week, facing Newcastle at home, the league leaders, and then a trip to Preston, a team unbeaten at Deepdale in 2017, if you'd said we'd get a point, would you have taken that at the start of the week? Rob, I'll start with you.
I think probably, and also if you cast your mind back a few weeks, I think on this very podcast, I think it was agreed that in the five or six games in this cluster of games, if we came out of it with maybe 6 or 7 points, that would be a good total. And we have beaten Wolves. We had the draw against Newcastle. So we're getting close to that in advance of this supposedly slightly easier run of games at the end of the season. But I think 1 point out of two is never ideal, is it really? I mean, I think you're always wanting to get at least a draw in both games. That would have made the world of a difference.
Westy, what about you? What were your expectations? I know in the prediction league, I think you had Reading down for, I think, 3 points. I think you had us winning at Preston.
God, and you wonder why I'm bottom of the prediction league. again, 1 point. In hindsight, I was saying beforehand, we probably would have took a point, but looking at Fulham winning and catching us up, now you're looking over your shoulder, which becomes a worry. So ideally would have liked 3 points from the two games, but you get what you get.
Yeah, well, the week started well. That 0-0 home draw with Newcastle, you know, they're a team that were coming to the Medeski, having won at Brighton, having won at Huddersfield, two places that, you know, we picked up nothing from. And Reading did really well. That they battled hard, and I think you could quite possibly argue by the end of it that if there was a team that deserved to win it, it might well have been us.
Yeah, we could have nicked it at the end. I thought Newcastle probably, they shaded it by the fact they had more shots on goal and our Abzi had to do more work. But certainly Reading were in the match all the game. I thought they was never outshone for a great deal of time. I thought it could have gone either way, especially at the end when we had a chance to win it. My mate, actually, funny enough, he had a £22,000 bet going on Newcastle beating Reading.
He put £22,000 on?
He was there to win £22,000. And he rung me at half-time and he said, "How's it going?" And I said, "I'd cash out." And luckily he did. So.
Was that part of an accumulator then?
It was part of an accumulator.
Hashtag gamble away,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, gamble away, obviously. But yeah, he was ringing me up to find out how it was going because he was so concerned about how it might turn out. And I said, look, it could go either way. And that's basically how it turned out.
Surprised he didn't text him saying, yeah, Newcastle are 2-0 up. Yeah. Do you want to send me some money then?
I think he knew what the score was. I just want to see how the game was going.
Okay. Rob, what do you reckon? You were there as well. Was this a game that Reading, again, do you think they maybe could have taken 3 points from, or was this a good point?
Oh, I think it was a good point, but I think possibly we could have taken the three. I think McCleary went close at the end, didn't he, where his shot hit the top of the bar. And generally, I think the performance was good, barring perhaps the first quarter of an hour where I thought we looked a bit tentative. After that, I thought we had some fantastically long spells of possession. And generally, I think held our own really well. So,
what did you make of the performance of Joey Vandenberg? Because we were talking on last week's show about, is he a squad player? Is he an automatic choice? Thought on this night he was excellent, taking a high mark in the player ratings. What did you make of his impact?
I thought he was superb. I mean, I was sat uncharacteristically behind the goal, and you always get a good view of how well a player can read the play from behind the goal. And he was just there in the centre, just totally bossing it. I mean, I thought he had an excellent game. Yeah, really superb.
Yeah, he led. I thought he was a great leader on the pitch. And you can see why Stam trusts him. We spoke about that last week as well, that he seems to trust him. And you can see why by games like that. Because I thought that game and the Fulham game at home a few weeks before, I thought Joey Vandenberg was the best player on the pitch.
OK, well, if we set ourselves up nicely there with a point that we might not have expected. So going to Deepdale, it is a place where Preston are in rampant form. They've not lost there this year. And they're very good. Just a very Jekyll and Hyde side. A bit like Reading, really. Very strong at home. Not so good away. We turn up here. 30 minutes, it's all looking okay, we're doing all right, keeping the ball, creating a few chances, and then, just in the space of, 20-odd minutes, completely goes tits up, we're 3-0 down and the game's dead. Rob, what happened?
Well, I think for the first half hour we played well. I wouldn't overstate our dominance, which a lot of people are talking about. I think we were marginally the better side. But then, unfortunately, it was an individual error, and individual errors, you do feel sorry for the player, in Tyler Blackett's case, in this case. But you know, it was punished and some, really, when Tom Barkhuizen just kind of swept the ball into the net with a really great finish. And then we went missing, let Barkhuizen again run the whole length of the field for the second goal. And then finally Shane Horgan put it in after what I thought looked like a bit of a handball. And after that, we just weren't in it, really. Marcus went missing for the third goal just after half time, and after that it was just huff and puff and we just weren't getting anywhere. So really disappointing against, it has to be said, a really underrated good side, but still very, very poor.
Westy, this was a horrendous case of deja vu for me. I felt like I was watching the Brighton game again. The ease at which the opposition went from their end to ours. The timings, I actually timed this. The first Preston goal took 14 seconds to get from their keeper's arms to the back of our net. The second goal took 15 seconds to get from our corner to the back of the net. Why are Reading getting so ruthlessly ripped apart on the counter-attack? We saw it at Brighton and we've seen it tonight. Well, sorry, on Saturday.
Yeah, anyone who seems to have a run at them and be direct, like that obviously Brighton and Preston were, it seems to cause us all sorts of problems at the back. And if you look at the defending, I mean, most of the time it looks like they're on ice. They're all on the floor, slipping over, tripping. It was comical, I thought, some of the goals we conceded against Preston. But it just seems that if someone goes at Reading, as a run at Reading, especially the back four, they tend to crumble.
Yeah, I mean, Handbags has delved into the stats here, as he's prone to do, and does it very, very well, it must be said. He was looking at how Reading lose away games and win away games. The seven we've won away from home this season, we've scored 14, conceded just 5, so averaging 2 goals per away game. The 9 defeats this season, scored 4, conceded 27.
Mm.
Conceding 3 goals away from home so often.
Yeah, it's happened all through the season. I think, again, if you look at the way Reading set out to play, we seem to get caught a lot when we're attacking, and I don't understand why that keeps happening, because it's not a new thing. We've been noticing it for weeks. So surely they should have done something about it by now.
Rob, is there any obvious solution you can see to the problem?
Well, I think keep it tight, really, starting with the Sheffield Wednesday game on Friday. I mean, there's an element of this which is modern football. I think a lot of people are aware that the game's changed in recent times, in that teams are often most vulnerable when they're taking corners and a lot of players are committed forward or free kicks. But, you know, we've excelled in being terrible at this. So I think maybe just being a bit more cautious, which I thought we were against Newcastle generally. I think we were pretty safety first. I think we, from the start of the game, a draw looked like it was going to be a satisfactory result. I think we need to go into the Sheffield Wednesday game thinking exactly the same, really.
Yeah, you mentioned the individual errors, unfortunately, and it's Tyler Blackett, as you say, slips up for the first one. The second one, Chris Gunter, I'm surprised he was still standing because he must have been so dizzy at the end of that move. He just didn't seem to want to put in a tackle.
No, he was tied up in knots, wasn't he? He still tripped over his own legs in the end. But yeah, again, it was just someone run at him and he tended to just crumbled. And I can't understand how experienced defenders are making these sort of errors.
At the other end, we're talking about keeping goals out, but at the other end, it's becoming just as much of a problem now. 4 blanks in the last 5 games. We've been playing some pretty attacking lineups. We've seen Lewis Graben playing with Jan Kermgren, something we've wanted, albeit, for me, not in the right position. I don't think he's a wide forward. I want to see him through the middle. But even so, you've got a lot of attacking talent on the pitch, and they just can't score goals. Again, Westy, is there anything obvious that's standing out to you why they're not putting the ball in the back of the net?
No, because I think, especially against Newcastle, they created chances to score goals, and Graben, how he missed that header in the first 45 seconds, God only knows. So it's not that the opportunity wasn't there, it's just that they're not taking him. And you get punished if you don't take your opportunities when you're on top of games, and that's what's happened to Reading in the last two or three away games now.
What have you made of Graben so far, Rob?
Well, unfortunately, I was late into the ground on Tuesday, so I missed the chance that he's just referred to. Well, I think it's a little bit difficult to judge him because, you know, he's so often been deployed on the right-hand side of midfield. And actually, I thought for the first half hour, he linked up with the passing quite well on Saturday. But, yeah, it just seems that we have this formation. We have one central striker, and Kermigan's had a really good season, doesn't deserve to be dropped. And really, it's up to Graben to persuade Stam in training that he's worthy of taking Kermigan's place here and there. Yeah.
Well, he's had the opportunity. I think, what game was it he played up front on his own? Because was it Fulham at home?
It could well have been.
I think it's Fulham at home. And again, he didn't shine in that game to say, actually, no, you should be starting up front every week. And like I say, he hasn't scored for two years, is it? And for a striker, that ain't great, no matter how many games you've played.
And you often look at strikers, and one thing I've noticed with Reading strikers, and this is going back to the Brian McDermott era, is the amount of shots per game they're having is down and down and down. If you remember the Curran and Butler days,
yeah.
They bagged a hatful of goals, but they would have had a lot of chances. Lewis Graben is averaging just under one shot per game. When he was in his pomp for Norwich, 2.3 shots a game. And when he was playing for Bournemouth alongside Kermgren, 3.3. That's, if you're a striker that's out of form, you want as many chances as you can to get yourself into form.
Yeah,
and if you're averaging less than one a game, that's not ideal.
But is that a consequence of the way Reading play? I would like to see how Norwich and Bournemouth used to play when they was playing up front, because maybe they're a lot more direct than Reading. Reading seem to want to carve out a great chance, don't they? And they do, in general, get two or three, and they take one or two, especially at home.
If that's the case, why have you brought Graben in?
Well, you brought him in because you think he's better than what you've got. Well, that's arguable, because I don't think he's added anything extra than what they had there in the first place.
No, I think the only thing to be thankful for, although I do think it's a bit early to judge him, is that we haven't spent money on him. It would have been quite an expensive transfer fee.
Yeah.
So I think what assumes, and this is possibly the case with Jordan Much as well, that in the summer we'll decide well not to take up any option that might be there.
I'm just really disappointed, because I thought this was a fantastic signing, and I think he was a player who's got ability, he's got that pace we've been looking for. He just doesn't seem to fit in this cog. I think he needs to thrive in a 4-4-2, and Stam just has no inclination to play that at all.
And again, to be fair to both of them that we've had on loan, they haven't had a lot of game time before they got here. So you might see them in the next four or five matches, they've got their actual match fitness going, they might come good. And we'd know that they've been historically good players in this division, so we can't say that they're bad signings. I just think at the moment they're not bringing anything that we didn't already have.
Speaking of new signings, we saw our first minutes of Reece Oxford in a Reading shirt as well. Robbie, he only had sort of 15 minutes to prove himself. What did you make of his little cameo?
No, I thought he looked quite decent, actually. He's very tall, which I didn't know. I'd never seen him play for West Ham or anything like that, so it was my first view of him. And, yeah, he looked very elegant on the ball, very calm on the ball, like a kind of young, I know it's a cliche, but a young Rio Ferdinand, perhaps. And I think definitely worth a look in a future game.
Well, Stam has said in his news conference today, just before we recorded this, that he was shocked by Reece Oxford, anyway, was shocked by the intensity of Reading's training, and that's why maybe we haven't seen as much of him. But he says he's fully ready to go now and in contention. And with a few injury worries hanging over us, Liam Moore going off injured against Newcastle, Paul McShane injured against Preston as well, that he might well get his opportunity. We'll touch on those in News Bites, those injuries, in a bit more detail. We'll end it with Yap's comments on the Preston game. And he said, "We needed to anticipate certain situations better. We were always late to the ball and they punished us. We had the same thing against Brighton and we've had it in previous games and we need to improve on it. We need to be decisive. If you can't play nice football in the certain way we like to play, sometimes you need to launch that ball into the stands. Be decisive. And we don't do that. That's why we're giving goals away." He seems to see... all the obvious problems, Stan, with what he says. I just wonder if... do you think the players are possibly still a bit scared to do that?
Yeah, I think they are, because it was very much what we can see on the pitch drummed into them to play it close and play it tight and keep possession. And I don't think I've seen at any stage this season, I've seen a centre-back run across a pitch and boot one in the stand at any stage. I don't remember seeing one in any of the games I've watched. So they're obviously told, try and play out at all occasions. Now, obviously now, we've been caught a few times on the ball. Maybe Stan's thinking we need to reevaluate this and go a bit more Sonko. And if you've got the ball at your feet, put it out of play and be more careful. And again, I think his instruction to them has been to play. They've tried to play, they've been caught, and now it's what actually be safe in future.
And just to get your views on this, Rob, because it's the first time we've had a chance to speak to you in the Stam era. There's been a lot of calls, interviews read at Berkshire, and Ady Williams is a particular vocal proponent of this. He's pleading for sort of Yap to sort of change his style, especially away from home, saying, look, it's clearly not working against the biggest teams because we keep getting thumped by them. Are you happy for Stam to stick to his philosophies, even if it does mean going through the pain of these heavy defeats? Or does he now need to be more pragmatic?
Yeah, I am happy. Yeah, I mean, I really like the style of play, and I think it's, the improvement in the league position compared to last year is just self-evident. But there's nothing wrong with the odd rosette or kicking it into touch, you know, or when you're in danger or like just no nonsense, you know. I mean, sometimes you've got no choice. But I mean, 95% of the time, yes, keep the style, keep passing, but it's just choose that moment to do something more drastic, like kicking it long or mixing it up a bit.
Still think Reading are lacking that ruthless streak. And it's interesting because I went away this weekend, so I wasn't at Deepdale, but I was reading John Keane's Some of the Parts again, and was reading the part about Steve Coppell's reaction after the 2004-05 season, where he was saying, we need match winners, we need those difference makers. And you just get the feeling that Reading is just in this little period, haven't got those match winners. They've not got the person that's popping up with the key goals. They've not got the person that's putting in that match-saving tackle. Even Ali Alhabsi's not quite pulling off those top-draw saves anymore. You're just kind of waiting for someone to really step up and take these games by the scruff of the neck, especially in that final third.
Yeah, I think I said last week when I was on here that I think Swift was doing that when he at the start of the season. He was getting them goals out of nowhere. He was hitting them shots from 25 yards, putting the ball in it. But since his form's dipped and he's been in and out of the team because he got injured and he sort of fell away a little bit, I think they've suffered because of that. Because there isn't that player in midfield that can grab you a goal or do something that I would say would be out of the ordinary. And also the pace that Reading play at, it needs to be stepped up sometimes, especially away from home. If you look at Preston's goal, all they've done really was nick it off us and go at us. And Brighton do the same thing, and Leeds do the same thing. They get the ball and they go at you. Where Reading tend to get the ball, pass it five passes, everyone gets back, then we try and play at the back and it just dies. Whereas we've got the players, we've got the pace in that team with Grabham, with Cleary, players like that can go at teams. And when Reading go at teams, I think they'd be stronger rather than trying to overplay it sometimes.
I think the good point there from Alan, I mean, basically, there needs to be more zip about the passing. You know, sometimes it is so ponderous. And if you think back to one of the other great Reading eras for football and like style of play was when Mark McGee came in. We played really good passing football during that era, but it was always like a bit quicker. You know, everything was much quicker. We had people like Scott Taylor on the wing bombing forward.
Yeah, Michael Jilksy.
You know, and I think, yeah, we have got McCleary now, who's obviously like a potent threat. But yeah, it just needs to be... The tempo does need to be quicker. I don't think anybody could deny that.
I still think that maybe all these team changes are disrupting that rhythm.
Yeah, definitely.
Players are not quite sure where they should be, what they should be doing. We're seeing this continual chopping and changing. I know injuries are playing a big part in that, but yeah, the mark of any good side is a settled side. Reading don't have that at the moment. They are changing every single week. And hopefully, you know, they got into that really good period, didn't they, where they beat Forest, they beat Burton, they beat Wigan. And they were going for those early, you know, look at the first two goals at Wigan.
Yeah.
Really sort of direct bits of play, and everyone was confident and knew what they were doing. And they just seem to have lost that recently. So fingers crossed it can come back. And they're going to need it to come back because the teams around us are finally starting to wake up. Well, I said the teams around us, it's more a team... Fulham. Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds, directly either side of us, are slumping just as bad as we are, but Fulham are on such a charge now. They picked up 4 points last week, a last-minute equaliser against Leeds at home, followed up by a 3-1 demolition of Newcastle at St James's Park. Don't think anyone saw coming. That leaves them now just 4 points behind us, with a game in hand. Their two games this week are against Blackburn and Wolves, two of the bottom five sides, so it is very easy, especially with Reading going to Sheffield Wednesday on Friday, see a scenario where Reading are out of the top six by Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it's quite a realistic evaluation of it as well. You could quite easily see that happen. You can't see Fulham losing to the games they've got. I mean, worst case scenario, you expect them to get at least 4 points. And Reading, Sheffield Wednesday, like you were saying earlier, our away form has been poor against teams above us. And it doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon, but it really needs to.
How worried are you worried at all, Rob, about Reading's playoff chances? Yapstam, again, saying his news conference today, he's confident they're going to make it. Are you still confident?
Not really, no. I mean, Fulham have been one of the best sides that we've played this season. Even in the home game, I think they played well, despite us winning. And, yeah, they're on a roll, aren't they? I mean, they look really, really good. And I think those two games that you just mentioned, the Blackburn and Wolves ones, I mean, you would expect them to get probably 4 points, maybe 6 points from those. They have a hard run in, but it's actually, after winning 3-1 at Newcastle, it doesn't look as hard as it did.
Yeah, that's what I thought. When I see what they had, I thought, well, if you beat Newcastle, I shouldn't worry too much about the ones you've got to play away afterwards.
They've got 10 games left in their final five away fixtures. They'll play five of their last eight away from home. They're at Rotherham, at Derby, at Norwich, at Huddersfield, and on the last day of the season, looking like a really, really big game, Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough. I still look at it, and Reading are now on 64 points. And you've got to think, if they get four wins and a draw to take them up to, 77 points, that's got to be enough.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if Friday comes and Reading manage to win that game out of nowhere, then all of a sudden we look at it with a different eyes altogether.
You'll be 5 points clear of Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be thinking, actually, there's two clubs below us now. They're going to run out of games. It all comes down to Friday, really.
So, bottom line, are we going to make it?
I'll say yes.
Rob?
I think I'll say yes as well.
I think yes. Reading still haven't shown, until we see that their home form has collapsed, which it clearly hasn't. We've just held Newcastle. They've got the best home record in the division, and we've still got, four or five home games left.
That's what's saving us. I think our home form will save us, and I think that the away games that we've got, you'd expect them to get points out of some of them. Norwich and Villa, you'd think they're quite hard. You know, the Villa ran a good season, but you still think they're capable of turning anyone over on their day. Norwich as well, bitty team, but they do tend to win games, and I know they've took a few hammerings, but still they're a good side. And
Forest and Burton, I think, are the two.
Forest got a new manager, it's a bit of a worry.
Yeah, Mark Warburton appointed today.
And then Burton, you think they should, if you can't beat teams like that, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
I think it will certainly go down to the last day, and you would back Reading to win at Burton.
Doesn't always though, Rob. Don't they always keep you hanging on, Reading? They never make it easy for themselves, do they?
No, I mean, the only exception to that was the Leicester game back in 2006.
But in general.
They like to keep it interesting. And it wouldn't be like Fulham to mug us off on the last day of the season, would it?
That's never happened before.
Absolutely not. Right, anyway, as mentioned, there were a couple of injury bits and pieces to get to from those games. We'll move on to that. And some international news that's coming up in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so the key bits of injury news surround Reading's, the centre of Reading's defence. As we mentioned there in the recap, Liam Moore and Paul McShane both picking up knocks in those two games. The good news is Yapstam has spoken at the news conference today about the pair, and he reckons they're both in contention and should be available for that trip to Sheffield Wednesday on Friday. Massive, massive boost, guys.
Yeah, they need them too, definitely.
When they both play together, when I said Moore was missing at Preston, and that's what happened, you just need that pair together, Rob.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Moore's been transformative this season for us, and we can't really afford to be missing him for too many of the remaining games.
Absolutely not. A couple of other knocks around. Unfortunately, it looks like Liam Kelly is going to miss out with a hamstring problem. Jordan Much also a doubt as well, although, unfortunately, I'm not Much's biggest fan. I don't think that's a massive loss. I'm sorry, Jordan. Feel free to prove me wrong. But anyway, I suppose it's nice. I don't wish injury on anyone anyway. So return to fitness soon. Liam Kelly's injury hasn't stopped him being named in a provisional 39-man Republic of Ireland squad for their game with Wales. Nice to see him included for the first time. Always good to see Rawls getting into international action.
Yeah, another one of our long list of Irish internationals as well.
Yeah, I think there was about
racking them up.
I think there's another four or five in the squad that have come through Reading at some point. There was Pearce, Doyle, Johnny Haynes, and McShane was named as well.
Yeah, it's good. I think, again, his performances have been, again, bitty, I think, at times. I think he's had some good games, and he's had some games where he's been anonymous, but he's definitely looking like a player that's one for the future. He's done well for a young lad coming out of absolutely nowhere and managing to get into the first team. And they will have games where they sort of drop in form, but obviously Republic of Ireland have noticed him, and I'm sure many caps to come for him over the years.
Yeah, absolutely delighted to see that. It's just so exciting to see a young player who's been at the the squad for quite a long time, get this international recognition. And even if they have named 39 in the squad and is very unlikely to make the final cut, I think it's great, augurs well for the future, and it'd be lovely to see him develop. Yeah,
even if he just gets in the squad and goes training, you know, training with different players, learning new techniques, stuff can only benefit.
Well, it's nice for him that he's been recognised. Yeah. You know what I mean? He must think, great, I was nowhere this time, even 10, 12 weeks ago, really.
12 months ago.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden, right now, I'm on the brink of international recognition, so well done you.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of youngsters, unfortunately, one who it's not seeming to work out for is Aaron Cool. There's a story up on the Tarlest End you can read at the moment. Aaron, in interacting with a Reading fan asking, you know, what are you doing at the moment? He sort of says nothing. Basically, he said that he's not allowed to play for the under-23s at the moment. He is at Reading. He's just not doing anything. Certainly seems like, again, and there's been no confirmation, he swiftly deleted the tweets this morning. I think a little bit of remorse creeping in.
Yeah, I think someone might have reminded him not to. You know,
yeah. But I only bring this up in the context of it just shows how, you know, we talk about how Liam Kelly's come from nowhere. Cool's obviously kind of, their paths have crossed directly. Cool's gone from being talked about as a future Premier League player, Manchester City buzzing around him, Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Now he looks like to be on his way out of Reading. He can't get a sniff in a perfect passing team. Well, you'd have thought he would have thrived, Rob.
Well, that's right. I mean, he seems to suit the style of play that Stan wants perfectly. But I think, obviously, the alarm bells started ringing a bit when he went away to Dundee United and Boreham Wood, which, you know, let's be fair, are weaker standards than Reading by some distance, and didn't really pull up any trees. In fact, was like actively disappointing according to some results reports.
Well, John Keane went up and watched him at Dundee United and said he had an absolute shocker, although admittedly that was a team that was horrendous all of last season. It wasn't just Cool.
This is difficult, but he sort of badly needs another loan move, or perhaps a more judiciously chosen one, and if he can do well somewhere, then fair enough, but it really isn't looking good. It's quite disappointing. Yeah,
and we're going to touch on youth players that haven't really sort of reach the levels we thought they would, or vice versa. That's going to go up on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thetarlest. Then we're going to make a real push to try and go into the bold new arena that is video. So Wester, you know, we'll try and find some money in the budget if you want to get touched up or what.
Makeup. Yeah. Do I need to then?
Well, you know, face radar and everything.
All right, fair enough.
Well, no, actually, I kind of need to work you down so you make the rest of us look better.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I'll take that.
I think I've spun that around.
Well, good work there.
But no, so check that out. We'll be chatting after this show finishes recording. That'll go up on YouTube in the next few hours or so as well. Hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, it is on the way. And finally, in News Bites today, news that Reading could lose their director of football, Brian Tevreden, because Derby County are apparently interested in his services. Get Reading are reporting that no approach has been made at the moment. They put the question to Yap today and he didn't exactly deny it. He just said it would be really disappointing if he moved on. How much of a blow would this be if Brian did move on?
I think a big one. I think he's made waves for a young man doing the job that he's doing. I think he's made waves in the football world. And when you do that, you get other job offers from bigger clubs or more money or whatever you want to look at it. Derby definitely need to change their approach to trying to get out of the Championship because they've failed consistently over the last, what, even 5-10 years now. They seem to buy players at extortionate prices, and I think they might be looking at someone like that who could get them good players at a decent price and then get them into the Premier League, because obviously where they want to be. We say all the time about Derby, their wage structure must be horrendous, and the players they buy are average at best. So you can see why they want him. Will Reading want to lose him? Of course they won't want to lose him, because he fits the Reading mould. Get players in cheap and sell them expensive. And that's pretty much what he's done since he's been here.
So we look forward to Sandro Wiese and Danzel Gravenberch signing for Derby.
Oh, let's hope so.
But no, I'd echo everything that Alan said there. I mean, I think he's done really well. He's a really unknown name. He's the sort of person that if things had started going badly, people would have been saying very quickly, what's he done? And he's really quietly in the background done very well in bringing people in, and as Alan said, it's like about getting people sort of for reasonable money and then hopefully good sell-on value. So no, he's done tremendously well.
Yeah, you can very much see the appeal for Derby. They've appointed Gary Rowett today. Certainly seems to be going a much more low-key approach, although I thought they were going to do this when they appointed Paul Clement, and Mel Morris, the chairman there, just seems to change his mind every 5 minutes. Steve McLaren must wonder what he's done. I mean, how many games did he get? 20-25 games?
Yeah, again, he's been around the club a long time though, hasn't he? I think they're just consistent chokers, aren't they, Derby? Every year they get touted to go up in the top two, and every year they fail.
Yeah, I do have half of the, you know, you do have to wonder if maybe Derby are actually preparing for a bit of a fire sale this summer. I don't know where they're going to stand with FFP, but the amount of transfer fees they've been paying out, they've got to be skirting with it. I know they're getting 30-odd thousand through the gate every week, but even so.
They must have a big squad as well, mustn't they? They've got a lot of players hanging around Derby.
Yeah, well, the likes of Nick Blackman and Matty Vidra.
Yeah.
Prime examples.
£12 million worth of footballers. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good luck, Brian, if you do decide to move on. But, you know, we had similar concerns when Nick Hammond moved on and Reading have shown that they were able to bounce back. So, fingers crossed, those in charge, whoever they may be this summer, Lord knows at this point, can get the job done if Brian does decide to move on. Right. And speaking of moving on, we're going to move on. It is mailbag time. We'll get to your thoughts just after this.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So a very big thank you, as always, to everyone who has chipped into the mailbag this week via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for the email inbox, and also who've been to facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. And as mentioned, that new YouTube page is up now at youtube.com/thetarlhurstend. Go give that a subscribe and hopefully you'll see a few notifications pop up about videos in the coming weeks and months. Anyway, let's delve in. Valdemar Janoszak, who wrote that magnificent match report from Brighton, he says, in the last podcast, you dismissed Joe van den Berg as a squad player. What? Do you regret that mistake? Westy?
I don't remember exact comments. I seem to remember saying that if he was in the Premier League, he wouldn't get sniffed at the team.
Maybe. Should we just throw Johnny under the bus? Was it Johnny?
Handbags, actually. I think he was.
Sounds like something he would say, yeah.
Yeah, we'll just throw everyone else under the bus. But, I mean, what do you think? Is he one of the names that should be on the first 11 of the team sheet every week? Or is he still a mix and match player?
Well, we've just been saying how much we want McShane and Moore as our centre-back pairing, so possibly not unless you go with the three and he's in the middle. But, I mean, I'd quite like to see another look at him in sort of defensive midfield, really, you know, getting a few tackles in, particularly against Sheffield Wednesday. I think that would be very, very apt.
Yeah, I think we just discussed it, but I think if you look at him in the big games that we've had recently, he's been the standout player. So judging by that, you'd have to say then you'd have to pick him in some form or another. And I thought he probably plays best as a third centre-back, because that way he can go and shut the ball down, where he tends to play, if he's played in a four, he tends to chase balls he's never going to get as a midfielder would, and then left gaps behind him.
Yeah.
And that happened, I can't remember who played at home, but it happened quite a lot, and he got caught out. But yeah, especially if you're playing him in a three or as a holding midfielder, I think there's no other choice for him.
I'm still not sure he's an automatic first 11 pick for me, but he's very much in the first 14, if that makes sense.
He's a leader, isn't he? And like you said, trust him. And I think his judgment is probably better than ours on this. So, yeah, I'd say that you'd have to pick him because he's played well in the big games recently, and that's all we can judge him on, really.
Yeah, he's almost like an old-fashioned sweeper, really, you know, in the role he played, certainly against Newcastle. He's, like, dropping slightly behind the level of the other two centre-backs. And a sweeper is a position I used to really enjoy in the 80s and until it became slightly outmoded after Arrigo Sacchi kind of blew it out of the water with the Milan side. But I think... you know, yeah, I mean, he's just someone who reads the game so well. So, yeah, I mean, squad player. I mean, they're kind of all squad players, really. So, yeah.
Yeah. Dave, who does the alternative view up on the Tarlhurst End, he says, following on from my call to Adu Williams after the game against Preston, are the January transfers not as good as what we already had? If so, why pick them?
I heard that call, actually, when I was travelling home. Sometimes I think with managers, if you get these players in, you're sort of putting yourself under pressure to play them, especially if you're getting them out of the Premier League like we have. Are they better than what we've got? We just discussed it. They haven't brought anything extra, I don't think. Are they good to have in the squad? Yes, because it makes you a stronger squad. But I think for Much and Grabham, I thought when they came here, all of us thought that actually these are better players than we've got. It's just that they haven't proved that yet, I don't think.
No, I mean, you look at some of the other people we've brought in when we've been in lofty positions in the Championship in the past, like Thomas Sivka, Michael Dobson, John Halls, Benik Afobe. They were just really people just to sort of cover for injuries or to sort of flesh out the squad a bit. But people like Grabban and Much, they, I think, would be expected to come straight into the team. One of the main motivations for coming would be first-team football. And I think that creates its problems in itself. You can imagine around the dressing room where suddenly you've got all these players jostling for position. I mean, I'm disappointed enough that we can't fit both Kelly and Swift in because I like them both so much. But, you know, that was beginning to look like a problem even before Much came in. So I tend to agree with Alan.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Reece Oxford and Thiago Laurie, neither of whom I mean, Ilori, in the few minutes we did see him, apart from his throwing technique anyway, looks very impressive, but obviously picks up that big injury and you worry he's going to have an impact this season. And Reece Oxford, we've not seen more than 15 minutes of. So, but the other three, I mean, Popper, not done anything really, runs around a bit. And the other two, as you mentioned, have had their own issues. So at the moment, what seemed like a joyous transfer window is looking like a bit of a disaster at the moment. Well, disaster is too strong a word, but underwhelming, I think.
Yeah, it's not, like you said, it's not made anything better. It's just kept things plodding along at best.
Moving on, Sean Mosby says, Mobzibzy. I don't know, butchered his name. Wouldn't be anything new on this show. Sean. We'll go with Sean. He says, not so much a thought as much a question. Do you think we would have been better off without the January signings? So sort of following on from that.
No, I don't think we would. I think if you got a threadbare... Well, even when you got some injuries, I think we'd have been pretty threadbare. So, no. Like I said, I don't think they've improved anything. I just think they kept things plodding along.
Rob? Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and that makes three. I think you need them in. Okay, they maybe could have been used in different ways, but they're certainly better to have them than not.
Yeah, it's been nice to look at the bench and think, actually, that's quite a strong bench of players there, whereas maybe at the start of the season, we was looking at Graf and Bursch and people out thinking, well, they ain't coming on. And when they did, you wish they hadn't. So, yeah, for that, it's made the squad stronger.
Yeah, the only... I suppose asterisk you might want to put by that whole conversation is how much have they cost the club, I guess, would be the other thing. And if it, you know, I know we took out that £10 million loan.
Yep.
And if it turns out all of that has just gone on wages for players for, you know, the best part of 6 months, then you do have to say, well, maybe.
But like I said, on the back end of that, the season's not over yet. So they might end up coming up trumps 3 or 4 games for the end of the season and we get promoted. Yeah. And everyone says, what a great bit of business.
But if Jordan Mutch pops up and scores the winner at Wembley, I'll be the first to campaign for a statue in his honour outside the Mad Stad.
That's so exactly what might happen. So we'll wait till the end of the season before we judge it.
We will see. RFC Fan Abroad asks, why has Stam stopped playing 3-5-2?
Good question. Don't know. Maybe personnel. Not sure. I think, like I said, Swift's drop off in form might have changed things. I'm trying to shore things up. I don't know. You'd have to ask him. But I think it's maybe sometimes it's horses for courses. And results haven't been bad. I mean, we've had a lot of hard games away from home and obviously we struggled in them. But I think he's still, again, I think we expect too much sometimes, as in Stam is a new manager and he is learning the Championship. He wouldn't have known an awful lot about it before he got it, I wouldn't have thought.
What system do you like, Rob, in terms of Stam?
Well, I mean, I'll answer that in a minute. But I mean, I basically think that 3-5-2 becomes 5-3-2 when you're playing against better sides. So, you know, Beater and Gunter are sort of pushed back and are more defensive when you're playing against Newcastle and Preston, basically. Both of them are amongst the better sides in the division. So I don't know whether he has entirely abandoned it, to be honest.
I think we struggle for wing-backs as well. I don't like Gunter as a wing-back. I don't think he does anything going forward. I think his first touch lets him down too much. He's not a threat. Whereas if Abita plays down the left side, yeah, Abita's I think he's more set up to be a wing-back, Abita, because he's not a traditional left-back anyway.
He's a more natural
anyway.
Winger than a
And if Blackett's playing as a wing-back, he's not a wing-back either. So I think the personnel in the squad makes it very difficult to play with wing-backs.
What do you make of Chris Gunter? Is it time to give someone like a 10-0 Watson a game? I've got an article that will be coming out on Gunter in the next 24 hours. But if you look, kind of what you've just said, his offensive output is
poor.
Offensive.
Yeah, I think it's so I think it's poor. As someone said this week when he was watching the Newcastle game, he said he's no Murty, and he is no Murty. I mean, Murty could go bombing down that wing and get crosses in and look like a threat. Whereas Gunter doesn't look like a wing back. He looks like a right back who's trying to force his way into playing as a wing back. And I think because of the way Gunter is, or he is quite athletic and he can get up and down, I think that leads people to think that maybe he could play wing back. But I just don't think he can. I don't think he's good enough to play wing back.
I mean, I would stick with him for the moment. I mean, I like Watson and I'd have no problem at all.
Yeah, we've got no choice really, but yeah.
Yeah, if Gunter got injured, then I'd be happy with Watson coming in. I think he looks very promising, but I think for the moment, I think it's fine. I mean, I think a bit of experience in there, particularly with a tough away game against Sheffield Wednesday, we're mainly going to be defending against a very energetic side. I think for the moment, he's doing just about okay. I agree with you. I don't, going forward, you know, he doesn't tend to put good crosses in, etc. But
yeah.
But I think defensively, he's okay most of the time.
Yeah, he's a right back. He's a right back trying to play as a wing back, and yeah. I think it's a square peg in a round hole.
Okay, moving on to a guy who was also a bit of a round peg in a square hole when he used to play right back, Cem Karacan, who signed for Bolton to play under Phil Parkinson last week. Great to see Cem finally get a new club. Hopefully you've heard by now our 2-hour long interview we did with him just around Christmas time, and he spoke of his desire to really get back into the game, and it's great to see him there. But there were a fair few Reading fans, especially after we did that interview, that wanted him back at Reading. And Simeon Pickup, Bucks Royal, for the website, he asked us directly, he says, would you have liked to see Reading go for Cem Karacan?
I mean, probably not. I mean, I really enjoyed the interview. I really recommend anybody listen to it if they can, but I just think this sort of never go back syndrome, I know that's maybe a bit superstitious, but we've had it with Brian, we had it with Dave Kitson, we had it with Glenn Little, we've had it with all sorts of people, and it's very rarely Trevor Senior even going back in the day. It's never been quite as good the second time. And I think he's just, having been out, not playing football for 2 years, you know, I think he probably needs to play himself back into proving he's like a championship player, really. So I think Bolton's a perfect move for him.
I think it's a great signing for Bolton. I think it's an excellent signing for them. I like Cem Karacan. I always liked his energy. But could we honestly sit here and say, playing the way we play at the moment, is he a better footballer than the midfielders we've got at the moment? I'd say no. And how likely is it that he's going to pick up another injury? He was quite injury prone. He's missed a hell of a lot of games for us when he was here. So no, I wouldn't go back.
The Cem Karacan of 2013, I would take back in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
he was fantastic.
Yeah.
And he was playing in a passing side for Nigel Atkins and playing some of his best football for Reading. But there are just too many questions. I directly asked him on the show. I said, you know, are you still the Cem Karacan of that? And he wasn't exactly 100% confident with that. And he has no right to be after not playing so much football. I'm not slighting Cem at all. I think he's a fantastic bloke. And I'd have him back. I would take the gamble just on the basis of if they hadn't signed Jordan Much, I'd have said it's a no-brainer, get him in as cover. But when you've got Jordan Much, and we've just been talking about, you can't get Swift and Kelly in the same midfield, there's just not a spot for him at the moment. And you want to see him play football and get back to where he can be. And I think it's only a short-term deal he signed with Bolton. So there's nothing to say that if he doesn't impress over the next few months, and they can't have the conversation again. But just right now, I think it was a right to pass up on the chance. So, but yeah, fingers crossed he does fantastic well at Bolton. And I said, and if he does want to come back to Reading, I get what you say, Rob, don't go back. But I think he's got unfinished business after what happened here. So I don't think we saw the very, very best of him. So for that reason alone, I think maybe worth another look. Anyway, moving on to Handbags Harris, who gives his comment on the Preston games. There's another goal conceded on the edge from an unmarked man, another on the break caught short, another from a set piece. Hashtag same again and again. On that same note, Wilbo Swags, last week was phew, this week is poo. Michael Bassett, even more negative, say goodbye to the playoffs. But Luke Jarrett says, I know it looks bad, but I believe in the collar theory. Also, I feel like only Fulham will catch the playoffs, so I say loser for next week's game is thrown under the bus. The collar theory goes, if Reading have a collar on their shirt, they go on to win the league. If they don't, they end up in the playoffs.
Is that right?
Yeah, so there you go. That's the collar theory there. We've got a collar on the away shirt, so that'll be fine. What about any thoughts on any of those? I mean, we talked about what Handbag said. Unfortunately, it's deja vu, but
I think it's important not to panic. I mean, you know, a week ago, we were drawing 0-0 with the best team in the league. We've spent millions. You know, Preston, I've seen them quite a bit. They're a really decent side. I think people think, because they're perhaps a bit unfashionable, that they're not that good, but they've got some great players. I mean, Aidan McGeady on Saturday was just like running rings around us. You know, he's like an established player who's played in all sorts of the top leagues. Very, very difficult team to contain. Yes, we've lost 2 games, 3-0 away from home in recent weeks, which is slightly worrying. But, you know, I think we've got to kind of keep the faith. I mean, I think overall we're still in a great position. We'd have bitten people's hands off if offered this position at the start of the season. So, you know, let's get behind the team.
Yep, it's still in their hands. And like I said, they are in a driving seat. They have got some tough games. But again, if we come through them, then everyone will be saying how great we've done. I just think in all championship seasons, you have blips of form, or you lose a few on the bounce and everyone starts panicking. It is a marathon, not a sprint, and I think we've got enough in us to make sure we end up in the playoffs. And when you get to the playoffs, anything can happen.
And Reading have shown all season that they bounce back from these big defeats. You know, they lost at Brighton and they managed to go and beat Wolves. They got thumped by Fulham. They turned around and won a couple of games later. They got beat by Brentford, and they've always bounced back. There's been nothing to show us this season that, as weird as it sounds, it's normal. It's not. Funnily enough, I would probably be more worried if Reading had been beaten 3-0 twice in recent weeks, but we hadn't seen it this season.
No.
The fact that we've seen it so often almost kind of makes you think, well, it's just kind of what we do.
And I also don't think they've played at their optimum yet, Reading. I think Reading are still learning, and like the Wolves game was an ugly win. And I think there's not many games you can point to this in if actually Reading have blown teams off the park here, because we haven't. And I think we've got that to come. I think they've got that performance in them. It's just when it comes out.
Yeah. And Sam Richards echoes similar thoughts. Says, have to stick together now. No point turning on the players at this stage. Moving along, Ollie Rouse asks, what must Reece Oxford be thinking behind Tyler Blackett in the pecking order? Didn't come here to sit on the bench.
Well, he's been injured for a couple of weeks leading up to coming back on Saturday against Preston. So I think it's a bit hard to say. You know, I mean, he's clearly not been fit. I was a little bit surprised by what you said earlier about Stam's comment about the intensity of the training at Reading, you know, presumably being less than what it is at West Ham, which is comes across as a bit of a sly dig. But I just think, yeah, it's like all the players who came in, they've got to prove that they're better than other people. I thought he possibly did enough in 15 minutes on Saturday to deserve sort of featuring more heavily in the coming game. So let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, if he puts in the sort of performance I saw him play against Arsenal on the opening day a couple of years ago, it's fantastic. Against a really good Arsenal side, so he's clearly got a lot of ability. A lot of West Ham fans wondering why he's not been playing for Reading. So, fingers crossed he can have that big impact in the closing weeks. And we'll end the mailbag on a positive note from Nick Reid, who says at least a 106-point record is safe for another year. That, of course, comes after Fulham beat Newcastle. So there was some good to come out of that.
That was, yeah. I did sort of use that to think, actually, that weren't too bad after all.
Absolutely. Well, no better note to end the mailbag. As always, thanks to everyone who's contributed via at the Tarlest End on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com, facebook.com/tarlestend, and now youtube.com/tarlestend. We'll move on to any other business and preview that trip to Hillsborough.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
So it's another biggie, a trip to Hillsborough to face the Sheffield Wednesday side, who are just 2 points behind us in sixth in the Championship. As we mentioned, looking at Fulham's fixture list this week, it could very well be the fact that if we lose this game, we will be out of the playoffs come Saturday afternoon. But if you think Reading are in a bad run of form, I mean, Sheffield Wednesday have not much better. One win from the last five, including three defeats and a draw. They were beaten 2-0 at Villa on Saturday, and before that, they were held at home by Burton. Rob, this isn't a team, you know, we're talking about the pressure on Reading. This is a team that have, theoretically, their destiny's out of their own hands now. So they have to get a result.
Well, that's right. And I understand that, similarly to us, some of the signings they brought in January haven't really cut the mustard yet. Jordan Rhodes has been mentioned as looking a little bit lightweight against some opposition, apparently against Leeds, up against Pontus Janssen. He was just completely knocked out of the game. Sam Windle as well, who they got from Barnsley also, I don't think has pulled up any trees. And then a missing player I really like in midfield, Kieran Lee, who's injured at the moment. Still lots and lots of quality across the team and on the bench. So, you know, a tough side, no question. But, you know, we've got to go in feeling that we can compete.
Yeah, you look at that team, Westy, a lot of very familiar faces at this level and a lot of players that can hurt you. And considering we're talking about a Reading team that conceding goals left, right and centre away from home, you don't like them having to come up against the likes of Rhodes, Fletcher and Winnell, do you?
No, not at the moment. Defending the way they've done away from home. But yeah, they're below us for a reason, because obviously they're about the same level as us. So, you know, there's only 2 points in it. They've had some sticky results, same as us, and they've lost some games they probably thought they should have won. So it's a pretty even match. It's one of those Championship matches that can go either way. I just hope that Reading can sort out that away for me.
Well, the bookmakers seem fairly confident about a Sheffield Wednesday home win. Wednesday are 4-3 on. The draw is 5-2. Reading are 15-4, so very nearly 3-1 on to win this game, which is, you know, sorry, nearly 4-1 on even.
It's unusual for a team that's above them, isn't it?
Yeah, ridiculous. Well, you talk about that, but the bookmakers now have got Fulham as shorter prices to go up than Reading, Leeds or Sheffield Wednesday.
I suppose they're the team on the charge.
Four favourites now to go up for them.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can say they're the team on the charge, whereas, like I said, we just said a minute ago, Reading, Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds to a certain extent have not been pushing ahead. We're all sort of sticking around about the same points, aren't we? And I suppose that they look at it that Fulham are going to come into the playoffs on a good run of results if they get there.
Yeah, well, a couple of good bits of good news for as far as Reading are concerned. Sasso suspended after getting sent off at Villa, the defender, and Forestieri, who's haunted Reading many times in the past. He's dealing with a knee problem, so he is doubtful at the moment. So it doesn't look like he'll start anyway. So a couple of bits of of good news anyway. So prediction time, just before we go into that, the prediction league standings, the only person who got any result right in the last two games was Handbags. He predicted we'd get thumped at Preston due to our poor record at Deepdale, and he was absolutely correct. Didn't get the score right, unfortunately, for him, but he did pick up the 1 point needed to move outright second. It's Johnny on 31 points, Dave's on 29, myself and Charles on 28, and Westy, unfortunately, still 10 points off the lead on 21.
So I can't. I struggle to back against them. That's my problem.
Let's let you go first then for the Sheffield Wednesday game. What are you saying?
I'm going to say Reading win 2-1.
Wow. Okay. Wouldn't be the result I was going for. I was trying to claw back points. I'm going to unfortunately go for a Sheffield Wednesday 3-1 victory. And Rob, care to make an honorary prediction?
Yeah, I think a frustrating 2-1 defeat, but hopefully with enough improvement in performance that we can go into the next game, which I think might be Leeds.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Which I think is crucial. That's the really big game, like home game against Leeds, where we really have to be up for it. I think a 2-1 defeat, but perhaps similarly to the Huddersfield game a couple of weeks ago, coming out of it with heads held high.
Well, fingers crossed we can upset that and pick up some points, as long as it's not the 5-2 that we got there a couple of seasons ago. That was tough. Anyway, just before we wrap up the show, a couple of bits and news items to get to. The first is to let you all know that it's the Star Hall of Fame ceremony is happening on the 30th of March. We will be there. We'll have a presence there. We'll have a little table there. Oh. Please come and say hello and buy some Tarleston mugs and see our mugs. You can find full details about that on the Star Facebook page and on the Star website. We'll have an article up on the Tarleston website in the next few days as well. But just one for your diaries. So Thursday, the 30th of March at the Medeski Stadium. It's open to all Star members and it will be open to non-members as well. You have to email Star to get on yourself on the guest list. Last year saw the likes of Graham Murty inducted and A.D. Williams as well. And I was part of the voting panel this time around. And there's some very, very worthy candidates, I can tell you, and hopefully a few of those will turn up. But yeah, that just about wraps up the show for this week. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. Rob, of course, you can go follow Bits and Pieces up on the Two Unfortunates.
That's right, yeah.
Still chucking away. What's the website address?
www.thetwounfortunates.com.
Very nice, very nice. And Westy, thank you as always.
That's all right. Just make sure you pick up the right envelopes when you go to the Star Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want no mix-ups.
Don't want to end up Paul Brayson by mistake.
No. At least he might turn up. There's that.
Yeah, I don't know. If you can drag him out of McDonald's. Anyway, sorry, Paul.
Is he working there?
I don't, yeah. Yeah, obviously, yeah. He's management now. Anyway, that does it for the show. Thank you both very much. As mentioned, go check out that YouTube page. We will have a bit of a pub chat up there for you as we try and expand onto that frontier. But in the meantime, we'll be back with this show early next week. Not sure exactly what day or who will be on it. It'll be a nice surprise, whatever the case. Thank you as always. Check out thetarleston.com. And as always, come on, you Ars.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.